courts, yeah. See, when the fat lady sings, you know that the ball game can begin. When you hear the recording in progress, you know we can begin. Today is Monday, April 4th, 2022. And I want to welcome everyone in front of me. Yesterday I was in a different world altogether, Shas and Paistin, and yesterday was a very, very important shir. I consider La Mita Shel Torah on a very difficult topic. Today is the last day of the Kollel, the last day of classes before Pesach, and normally I would be continuing with the Sat Maruv, but I want to pay a debt today, and Hakaret HaTov, I want to cite to you the Bachya, the author of the Chovah Kalavavot, Shash Lishi in the standard edition, page 138, and he says the most basic concept in Torah is Hakaret HaKol. And why do we worship God? Chayavim Leborei Yitalem Min Hasherech Vahodal Rov Hastol V'Gadol Tuvo Oleinu. And we have an obligation to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is why we're here. The beautiful world he gave us, the beautiful Torah, the beautiful life, the beautiful continuity. We're sitting here, Jews, so many thousands of years after Mount HaSinai, and the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, we have praise, L'Kavod L'Tiferet, the Mitzvah of Aliyah, Hakaret HaTov. But there's more to it. And this is the sad part of life. My mother always used to say, Zichrono Livracha, that you need guts to grow older. And when I look around, I reach a very simple conclusion. I'm the only one left from the original faculty of BMT 1969. And I may be the only one alive who knows the original story of how BMT began. And we have to be makatoiva to people who are names that no one even recognizes today. So I decided today to give a special shiur. I want to quote the Gemara in Menachot, Daf Chapchet Amid Aleph, Chapchet Amid Bet. Very fascinating Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Kol HaKelim She'asa Moshe K'sheirim Lo U'K'sheirim L'Dorot Chatzotzerot K'sheirat Lo U'Psulot L'Dorot. All the Kelim that Moshe Rabbeinu made for the Beis HaMikdash, he could use it, and all the generations afterwards could use it. If we could go into the Vatican and take out the clay Beit Mikdash, we can use it 100%, but the trumpets, only Moshe. Afterwards, another leader comes along, you have to make your own trumpets, new trumpets. Why? And all the Dashanim, I have to tell you, throughout the ages, reach the same conclusion. What do the trumpets represent? Trumpets represent the relationship between the leader and Klal Yisrael. Hatzotzrot, you blow on it, Bayakel, everyone should come together. Every generation needs a different trumpet, a different leader, a different language. And I can say it very simply, I've used this example with my devoted students, both in front of me and there are more people on the screen than those sitting in front of me, and more compliments represented. Everyone here is from Israel here already, as you heard before class. We were chatting with Atlanta and with Flatbush, etc. I use a simple example. What inspired me in my youth? Very simple. I take the bus from the Bronx, Bronx 36, get off on Amsterdam Avenue, and walk a few blocks to the yeshiva. I'm a third generation American kid. My father gets stolen, Babe Ruth and Lee Gehrig play Hagadolim Hashem Ba'aretz. And here I open the door to the yeshiva. I walk in, Alps is in Yiddish. Everything's Yiddish. I walk a few steps, there's the Chofetz Chaim son of law, Rav Mendel Sachs. I walk another few steps, there's Rav Noach Bunstein, the greatest Talmud the Bristol Rav Velvel ever had. Walk another few steps, there's an Einikel, a grandson of Rav Chaim Brisker, Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. And also give any Yiddish. I write in Washington that in seventh grade, my Rebbe didn't speak a word of English. This was the Shanghai crowd. I had to find Panasa for them. So we wound up in Yeshiva Salanta, like every other yeshiva, from Boston to Detroit, etc. They placed them all over America. My Rebbe, Rebbe Geshen Yankelevich, didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Yiddish. Eighth grade, I had Reb Henoch Fishman again. And this inspired me. No, I want to ask, do you think today we can go and start speaking Yiddish? When I speak Yiddish in class, immediately Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, who's sitting next to me to keep an eye on the screen that it shouldn't go off, he tells me, Rebbe, you have to translate to English. So you see, in every generation, there has to be a different approach. What happened after the Six-Day War, that a few individuals in Yerushalayim started to reach the conclusion Israel is the center of the Torah world. All eyes are upon Israel. Those of you who still remember the Six-Day War and lived it, I need not elaborate. We have to reach out to the youth. Let's have something that's centered in Israel, Jerusalem, but it can reach out and speak to the Anglo-Torah world. I think there's another Gemara, which is also very, very important. The Gemara in Megillah Dabchav Tep Amid Aleph, and this is only, it's not only a Gemara, you can find this in a number of midrashim. Atidei batei kisiyot batei midrashat shebavadam sheyifu be'eretz Yisrael. That the shuls, the yeshivas of Bavel, are going to be rebuilt in Israel. They're going to come an aliyah. Now, I want to ask you a simple question. What do you mean, come an aliyah? They're going to take the buildings and bring the buildings. We're going to go to Tunic and from your hometown, Stephanie, going to go to Tunic. And we're going to bring the buildings. You're going to give it to Israeli builders. The Israeli buildings are Arabs, Ukrainians, Chinese. And they're going to put a building together. You'll have the floor and the ceiling on the floor. How many of you are from Ranana? In Ranana, there's one shul they built. I'm a scholar in residence there. I couldn't believe it. They brought it over brick by brick from South Africa. And they brought all the South African workers, put them up in a hotel, they told me, for months. But they knew that they would do a proper job. So I think the Gemara, there's a different shot. Every Gola, we worked out ideas. We learned. It took a while. We were successful. When we have the Kibbutz Goliath and you're bringing in Jews from all over the world, each Gola has something to contribute. And here I have to say, as a student of American Torah history, it didn't happen overnight in America. Jews reached America in 1654. You all know the first reverend in America was Thatius, Reverend Thatius. When I was growing up, the number one top-rated tennis player in America was Facius, a direct descendant, son after son after son, was 100%. So we lost a lot in America, our education, our teaching, our attempts to reach out to the children. But it took a while, and by the 1960s, the Rabbanim, the Machanchim, YU, OU, Young Israel, Agudat Yisrael, you had in America already people capable of speaking the language, of understanding the new generation, reaching out, inspiring. And I think these two Gemaras, Gemara in Menachah, the Gemara in Megillah, people in Yerushalayim, and I'll give names in a moment, why don't we bring them together, have an institution which can speak to the new Anglo generation? And I was interviewed when I told a well-known rabbi, Mark Landai, I have to say it this way, Malka said to me, we're going in Aliyah. Either you come with me or goodbye. So he put the Jewish agency in touch with me. And I remember they interviewed me in New York in the Jewish agency building. And they said to me, we're going to need people like you. And what they mean, they're going to need people like me. And I think the answer is right here on my desk. All right? Here. This is one of the finest students I had in all my years of teaching. There he is, staring at me, studied here, got smicha from YU, Leib Irons, he's in Toronto today, Rabbi Dr. Leib Irons. And after he finished, he went to Mir. And I visited him in Mir, here I am, Yeshivat Mir, Talmid Shegala Maglin Rabo Imo. Now I don't have to, the Mishnah in Makot, I don't have to tell you, Mir, my life goes back to Mir. My Rebbeim, my tenth book, Be'ezrat Hashem, that I'm working on, and I consider it the most important of anything I've ever written. And I'm dedicating it in memory of my eighth grade Rebbe, Reb Chanuch Fishman, Mir, Shanghai. And yet, very erudite students in Florida, no youngsters anymore, YU graduates, professors, medical doctors, specialists, they gave me a gift, New York Yankee spring water. What BMT needed were Rebbeim who could combine these two. And that's the Gemara in Menachot, that's the Gemara in Megillah. Sanhedrin Lamechet Amidbei, Dor V'Dorshav, Dor V'Chachamav. Each generation, what was once good to my generation, will not work with the new generation. And this is the secret, and the time has come. Six-day war, Jerusalem, Israel, take advantage and center the Anglo-Torah world. Have an institution that is formed expressively for reaching out to Anglos. Now, there were institutions, for instance, the KBY. Many Americans went to KBY. I can tell you my own chaverim, I'll give you an example. My chavruta, Jerry Blau, Rav Yosef Blau, he came back from KBY, and I can tell you a story that I don't have to quote him. These eyes, these ears. He's talking to Rebbe Yef this year. We were, you know, learning with the Rav for many years already, and he says to the Rav said, and Rebbe says, who do you mean, the Rav? Rebbe, I mean you. He says, say, I said, the Rav, you don't speak in third person. The Rav couldn't handle it. But you see, there was a concept here. KBY, third person. I remember when I started teaching in Michalah, the Israeli girls, Harav Amah, I used to look over my shoulder, who are they talking about? But you see, it's a conflict in culture. And it was not geared to the Anglo. The idea of BMT was to form a school, an institution that would be geared to the Anglo mentality, a synthesis between Yerushalayim and New York. Now, who came up with this idea? And here you have to understand, the Jewish Agency was a different organization then. I never dreamt that they would come in Israel. When I saw in this morning's Jerusalem Post, they're going to invest millions of dollars in perpetuating Reform and Conservative Judaism on Atmat HaKodesh. And Reform Conservative, with all due respect, you're talking about assimilation and intermarriage. You can't believe what's happening in the conservative movement today. They already have a whole division dealing with intermarriage and helping them become members of the temple, etc., etc. And here you have in Israel. Then the Jewish Agency had a division called the Torah Culture Department. That Torah Culture Department, there was secular culture, and Torah culture was strictly Alpi Torah. The person who headed up the Torah Culture Department was a Pelish Yid by the name of Moshe Krona. Moshe Krona, the Rav loved him. And those of you familiar with the history of with Jewish Agency and Torah culture, it doesn't exist anymore. When the Reform and Conservative took over the Jewish Agency, they got rid of Torah culture. There's no such thing, Torah culture. We're Torah culture as well. Culture, Torah in general, not Orthodox alone. Today, there's a rebellion in the Jewish Agency because, thank God, the Young Israel movement led, I have to give them all the credit, that they brought out many votes from the Agudu world. And as you understand, they can't elect a successor to President Herzog because you need a, I believe it's a very strong majority, 9 out of 10, something like that. And the Orthodox have a say, a veto power. So right now the Jewish Agency has a temporary head. There was a woman that Lapid was fighting for. She only put bread on her Seder table a year ago, if you follow what's happening in the state of Israel and the news. So there was the Torah Culture Department. Moshe Krona was the head. The Rav, I once spoke with the Rav about him. The Rav said, he reminds me of the people I knew in Warsaw. He had that Pelisha understanding and insight. The Rav actually gave him his manuscripts to work on. One time Moshe Krona sent for me and he shows me the manuscripts. Some of these were published by the Jewish Agency, Torah Culture Department. And he shows me the manuscript. I said, I can't understand. The Rav was a left-handed genius. And if you saw his Kavyad, you had to be a genius to decipher it. So I remember Moshe Krona had a few words. I could not help him. Now, but it wasn't Moshe Krona who came up with the idea. Moshe Krona was like a Sabbath and Shalit Yisrael. A Sabbath and Shalit Yisrael, you have a Mankal, a Menachel Kali. In my building where I've lived for 53 years, from the time the building opened was when we came in Aliyah. So Moshe Mandelbaum lived there. That is the Chronel de Bracha. Moshe from the Mandelbaum gate. There was Moshe and Simcha raised, and Moshe was Mamish on the second floor. I'm on the fourth floor. So Moshe was the Mankal. He ran the Misrad HaTa'asiyah Mischa. He really ran it. He was the boss. So Moshe Krona had a person named Chaim Hamiel. Dr. Chaim Hamiel, you had to know him to appreciate him. This was the old-time Mizrahi. He was a poet, a soul of faith in Muna, clean-shaven. This was the old-time Mizrahi. But this was Chaim Hamiel. He was the one that came up with the idea. told Moshe Krona on it that we need an institution in Yerushalayim that is going to be organized and cater expressively to Anglo mentality. Then they started looking around for someone to head it up. And here you come to Moshe Horowitz, Rabbi Moshe Horowitz, known to everyone as Whitey. He had a brother who was known as Brownie, if you remember the difference in the color of their beards. And Moshe Horowitz, just to mention his name, it's a flood of memories that come back. Very briefly, his life story. His father was a clay kite. This was me. Excuse me?
You have to plug in the granddaughter's book.
I have a
granddaughter. Okay.
The first Hebrew word I learned was sablonitis. And you're already suffering from lack of sablonitis. Sablanut. I coined the word sablonitis, the biggest illness in Israel. So, Rav Moshe Horowitz, he was raised in the Midwest. He studied in Chicago. In Chicago already, he was a Talmud of Rav David Lipschitz. In 44, by the way, when I speak, not looking at the manuscript, I can be off in dates. Everything I'm talking about is in Washington. All the facts are in Washington. And I'm proud to tell you, for a memoir, it's over 530 pages. No one has found a mistake in it yet. I worked very hard. Generally, if you know memoir literature, I checked everything out to the end. That's one compliment I get. Another compliment, which I'm also very proud of, 530 plus pages and not one negative word. And if you know memoir literature, they take revenge. And it's not, I have people I can be angry at. Who cares? Angry, schmangry. When you try to know Torah, nothing else counts. But coming back here, Rav Moshe then went to New York to study at Peyre Vadas with Rav Shlomo Heinemann. I trust you all recognize the name, so the Yidman would pass for the wise. When YU brought over the Mechitah and then Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, after the Mechitah died, Peyre Vadas was starting to develop, and they needed a Shem Dover. They brought over a Talmud Mufok of Rav Baruch Ben Leibovich, Rav Shlomo Heinemann, and he was ashamed of it too. He took ill, and he died quite young that year. So Reb Moshe Whitey, who had come to New York to study at Peyre Vadas, wound up switching over to YU. And he studied with the Rav. These were the early years of the Rav, as after he succeeded his father in 41. And Reb Moshe gets smicha, and then he and his wife Leah, wrote his lovely, wonderful wife, just to see their image in front of me. And they came in Aliyah. They were part of a large contingent of Americans, B'nai Akivinics, B'nai Velrom. Not everyone stayed. There were problems. There were medical reasons. The Horowitzes went back to the States. He went into Chinuch, and along the way, he taught in Boston. He actually had Tova Soloveitchik Lichtenstein, I think, in third grade. Jeff asked Dr. Tova, she studied. This was one of her early teachers in Maimonides. Later, he taught in Washington, where he knew my brother. My brother then was doing the public service in Walter Reed Hospital and had just gotten his medical degree. And then he came to Florida, and he ran the school in Florida, but Leah and Rav Moshe were anxious to get back to Israel. And he came in 68, I recall yet, and 68 is when Machon Lev began. It began in a little building in Bayit Begotten, I believe on Rehov Rav Frank, if my memory is correct. And Rav Moshe was the dean of students. And then BMT began, and they picked him to head the school. And it was a real blessed choice. I had come in Aliyah the summer of 69, and I have to be honest, people looked at me like Malcolm myself. We were coming in Aliyah, it was not popular at that time. It's not like today, where I speak with Americans and they tell me every second person is applying to come in Aliyah. And there's no mitzvah today. Nefesh to nefesh picks you up and lifts you down. You don't know what Aliyah was like in 68, 69. I can entertain you with stories, but it's not for now. Of course, 68, 69, 70, everyone came by boat. Later, they had to stop the boat because the PLO threatened to blow the boats up in mid-ocean, and it's very hard to protect boats in the middle of the ocean. So we came by boat, but that's only, it's not just that you came by boat. That was a beautiful experience. But the Israelis were resentful. There were signs up. When we came in Aliyah, there were signs up all over the country. From an ole to an ole, our strength goes up. And the Israelis used to say, "May olel olel misenu olim." Our tax money goes up to pay for their aliyah. And there was literally resentment. You have no idea. The government was stupid too. They let us get cards without paying tax, and we had a white background around our license plate. Everyone knew you were an ole. You didn't pay taxes, and they would hate you and damage the car. And al tishavu, it was not easy. In addition, it's not like today where you go to Beit Shemesh. I apologize to Stephanie and Alan, but you go to Beit Shemesh, it's the only city in Chutz La'aretz that observes only one day Yom Tov. You follow? In those days, it was a swim or sink. I knew Hebrew, basically. I never went to a pod, but it was yeshiva Hebrew. But Baruch Hashem. And Whitey, I didn't have a telephone. No one had telephones then, which was good. It was unbelievable. I get a telegram that the Jewish agency wants to see me and to contact this number. And I met with Rabbi Horowitz. I remember in Rehov Ma'alot, in a little building where the agency had an office. And he said to me, "Look, I'm beginning a school. It's for Anglos. I don't want it just to be Limudei Kodesh. I want more. And I heard you have a doctorate." I made the connection. There was someone at Mahon Lev who told him about me. And also, he knew my brother from Washington. And he knew that my brother had a brother who had a doctorate in Jewish history. "I'd like you to teach a course in Jewish history." But he said to me, "Aaron, make it interesting. Students fall asleep when you teach Jewish history." I can testify that 99% of my students in the last 53 years have not fallen asleep. I can't win them all. 1% fell asleep, but 99% did not. Now, so BMT begins a little school. The Jewish agency rented Rehov Abavanel 24. The building is there. It's been rebuilt. It breaks my heart to see it. I can tell you, Professor Menachem Malone used to come into my shiurim. I once asked him, "Why do you come in? Who am I to teach? Rabbi Dr. Menachem Malone?" And he said to me, "Look, we don't know who Rabbi Soloveitchik is, but you're a student. And by listening to you, I start to understand the Rav." Not bad. He lived half a block. He lived in the building where the Chubina Rav, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, lived. The building in Rehov Ibn Shakrut that had a mikveh. They built the mikveh downstairs so the Chubina Rav could go to mikveh every day. And that's the way BMT began. Now, what do I mean by American mentality? Fine, you have classes. By the way, the Rashi Yeshiva, Whitey had Rashi Yeshiva, all wore the uniform, all were classic Talmidei Chachamim, not necessarily from our world, although they were broad. There was Rabbi Braverman and Rabbi Verna and Rabbi Rappaport, and these were fine, wonderful individuals. Rabbi Schwadron used to come in. I tell you, I still It's just unbelievable. He could speak in Hebrew and Yiddish, a few words of English. And while the American kids would be inspired, he had that koach. It's the brother-in-law of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And he was the grandson of the Vizhin Rav, the Masham Shvadron. And he would come in. Oh, it was widely attracted an element that was a number one. Now, what do I mean by mentality? So let me tell you a little story that I don't want to mention the name of the Shishibi still alive. There are reasons why. BMT began. It caught on. Within a few years already, every Hesvi Yeshiva, at least the well-known ones, had programs for foreign students. Money came in. Kids paid tuition. Then you had private institutions that gradually developed. Today I would say, I don't know, Stephanie, is there a number how many schools there are? There must be well over 50, 60.
In our network alone, it's over 40, so you can
imagine. Well over 50, 60, absolutely. Our network, Haredim, the famous Rabbi Druria, Rabbi Hutner's daughter, there must be, and it all began with BMT. When they imitate you, it's the greatest flattery you can get. And so we had a meeting, I still remember like yesterday, in Rehov HaBavanel, and Fresh Yeshiva from the Pew Hesti Yeshiva, from Whiting, etc. And I'm sitting there, and I was a kid then, don't overestimate my influence or my importance. I was a kid, but nevertheless. And we're discussing the kids that are coming in, the quality. And one Rosh Yeshiva says, "Ani lo tofes otam, ani lo mevin otam." And we look at him, and he goes, "They're sinners. What's the sin? Seder ends and lunch ends at 1:30. The second Seder begins at 3:34. They listen to the radio. I couldn't believe my ears. They listen to music, you know, the radio, whatever. This is a sin. We grew up in America. Music. Who didn't go to movies? I still remember the Mashiach Rav Lesson giving a shmuis that the gates are theater, the agoy gate. And we walked out of there, we were laughing. Who didn't go to, I hate to tell you this, who didn't go to Broadway shows? I just with Menachem Mogel, Rabbi Borwick, the Chrono Lebracha, so there were other Rabbanim there in the chaplaincy with him, and they were telling me stories how they ran out of chaplaincy school to meet their wives in Manhattan. They got tickets cheap from the USO, and they went to Broadway shows. No, Ashayla Kalisha was consigned. They said, not for now, but that was a different world then. And this Rushish, I couldn't believe my ears then. I can't believe my ears now. An American kid listens to some songs, Baruch Hashem. Today you'll have kids. Who knows what they'll do during the two-hour break. But then, Mishkefella. Let me go a step further. Machon Gold. The Jewish Agency always ran two schools, essentially to train teachers for Europe and South America. You know, try to go back and find and understand that you need to teach Hebrew schools, Talmud Torah. So there's the Chaim Greenberg Institute, secular. And Machon Zev Gold, Rabbi Zev Gold, the founder of Torah Vadashi, no one believes that today. He gave the name Torah Vadashi. Why did he give the name Torah Vadashi 1919? Named after what Rabbi Reines did in Lida, a yeshiva that was put into cherem by the more, what we call today, Haredi world. And Torah Vadash, why you should take them to court and take that name away. Torah Vadash is Yeshiva University. But that's Rabbi Zev Gold, so Machon Gold. Now watch. Machon Gog, these were Israeli institutions, all in Hebrew, training teachers for South America, for Europe. But it was not an institution named, inaugurated to cater to Anglo mentality. 1971, and I should have mentioned this in the Market Taiva, I didn't want to come in only out without a job. And then kind of desk in 1969, the Encyclopedia Judaica offered me a job in the Jewish Agency building. The head of it came, interviewed me, without going into any great details. When I applied to go in Aliyah, so at the Jewish Agency, they said, you're a rabbi, rabbi sweeps sweets in Jerusalem. You have a doctorate in Jewish history. They work in the zoo in Tel Aviv. Why did they do that? They explained to me years later, after the Six-Day War, there was a tremendous awakening in Aliyah and kids, America. Half of them brought in drugs with overjoy. That East Jerusalem drugs were so cheap, I don't have to elaborate. Many went back. By 1968, 69, they wanted to scare you to know that jihad is really in Aliyah. So they told me, rabbis, doctors, we don't need you, stay home. But I had one little advantage. In 68, JPS offered me a contract on my first book. It wasn't published till 71, 72, but I got the contract. I remember around Thanksgiving Day, 1968. The Encyclopedia Judaica saw someone know something and he has a contract with JPS. They brought me. And I have to tell you, I had no idea. We were totally idealistic. My wife, myself, my children, our children. And I started work. 1 month later, or 2 months later, they called me into the office, Rehov HaMeiri. It was in the building where Machon Meir is today. And right, that's the name. I have it right, Machon Meir, the outreach institution. Rabbi Dov Bigun, who I met first in BMT, where he was a tour guide. And they called me in and gave me a raise in my salary. I couldn't believe it. It turned out that they had offered me a salary. And I checked out. I could have bargained, but it was, you know, it's not me. And they were nice enough. We're so pleased with you. So I worked for them. In 71, the encyclopedia came out. I then faced the choice. The head of publishing that took over the encyclopedia offered me a very high salary, 2,000 lira a month, to remain a staff editor. But I can't leave teaching. I knew I had to go back to teaching full time. And I then started Machon Gold with BMT was one job, Michalal was another job. So now I come to Machon Gold, Israeli institution. I'm coming in, all right, the breath of fresh air, it's an Anglo. Let me just tell you two little stories that I write about in Washington. I live them and relive them until today. One story, very simple. A girl comes over to me in tears. And these were mature women already. I don't know if you realize, in two of the Yom Kippur War, you didn't come to Israel before you were a junior in college or already had a bachelor's. So this lady, I should say lady, not a girl, this lady comes over to me in tears. I say, what's the matter? And she tells me the following story. The dean of Machon Gold was the famous Rav Shlomo Tal. You all use his theater. A Talmud Chacham, a bit of Hasidic Yid, a wonderful human being, but an Israeli who had lived through 48 and 49. Well, every paper you have, there's another side to the paper. This girl took a paper like this, which she was finished with, and she threw it away. He saw it, pulled it out of the garbage can, and read her the riot act. What do you mean throwing away paper we write on the upper side? Rebbe Shlomo, I don't want to be gross, but you all know that what newspaper was used for in 48 and 49 and 50, the old timers will tell you. And this is a clash in culture. Why do you come down in the girl? This is an American girl in America. Finish with this to throw it away. Conflict, culture. But this story is even better. I come in one time, I'll never forget it, I reached Machon Gold. Machon Gold, as you know, was in the heart of Geula. And I always predicted it couldn't last long because that whole area was changing. When we came in Aliyah, it was Dati Mesorati, very little Haredi. By the time I finished teaching Machon Gold, it was Haredi, slightly Dati. Very little Masorati. And I come to the building, three girls are sitting, three ladies are sitting in front of the building and crying, like they're sitting shiva. So I say to them, what happened? Turns out they had adopted a dog. And they had the dog in the dormitory. Rabbi Tal found out, and he was a hysterical. A hund? A nevela? A trefa? A hund? A kelet? By Yidnas Adars? When I grew up, there was one Talmud in YU, Rabbi Bernhardt, Seichel Tzadik Levracha. He and his wife had a talk. I remember he used to walk in Amsterdam and just looked at them. I think crazy. He wound up afterwards with Papa needed a big dog in South Africa. He's one of those who built Takedown, became a Chabadnik. He once came to my shir when he visited here. I introduced him to the students. And he, Paka, had a dog. A Jew should have a dog. I tell him. He was hysterical. And he came down on these girls. And you know what was so funny? On Rehov HaMabonel, the boys had adopted a dog, and guess the name of the dog, Whitey. And Rabbi Horowitz found out the name of the dog. He was happy, you know, he understood. These are American kids, a dog. It's a beautiful beginning, a beautiful story of success. But there's another part to the story. And, you know, the tourists come. I see this Pesach, going to be more tourists here. I'm already invited to a bar mitzvah, Chol HaMoed. All right, Baruch Hashem. So the tourists see what we achieve, how happy we are. Baruch Hashem. The children, the grandchildren, they don't start to understand what's beneath the surface. We have paid a terrible price for our freedom, our independence, our return to the land of our forebears. I can tell you, I don't have enough fingers or toes to count all my students or children of students who were killed by Hayat Adam, by terrorists. I cry. Come into my office. You'll see a picture of the Rav, a picture of the Lubavitcher. You'll see a picture of Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum. The Horowitz family, this is classic. And Mark, I guessed yesterday, do a movie, a documentary on Rav Menashe Klein's tshuva. Someone should do on the Horowitz family. The great success and the terrible, terrible price. Rav Meisher had an older son, Eliezer. All of us, the old timers here, remember Eliezer well. Caused his parents endless achmas nefesh, and then came back, belay v'nefesh, to Torah Hashem. actually became a student of mine. He would come to consult with me because he was working with Anglos, and he basically grew up here, high school, college, all that went with it. Sometimes he had questions how to deal with them. But it's more than that. I had a student in Michlala, a flash of golden light. Came from a typical American Jewish home, very little knowledge of Torah. But somehow she went to day school, this was Washington, D.C., and very happy, overjoyed, day school. Became very close to Reb Moshe Horowitz and Leah's daughter, Tova, also my student. And then this girl went from day school onto high school, and she remained frum in high school, but didn't learn anything outside of secular subjects. And very bright young lady, originally by name was Debbie Wolf. Afterwards, they told her she has to use her Hebrew name, Dina, so it's Debbie Dash Dina Wolf. And she decided not to go to all the prestigious universities that accepted her, but to go to Israel, to Michlala. She was interviewed by Rabbi Abraham. The girl knew next to nothing. But on her application, she wrote, she knows a family in Israel. And I should say she was interviewed by Rabbi Cooperman. And on the application, she took the exam and she wrote, she knows a family in Israel, the Abramans, the Horowitzes. And when he saw, they saw the names, they accepted her. And she came to Israel, and here was a girl with very little background, but very bright. She was one of the greatest students I ever taught. She married Ellie. They lived in Kiryat Arba. And in 2013, Pashat Pekud Day, Friday night, they were slaughtered by terrorists. You all know the story. I still can't forget it. After Shabbos, it was on the news without names. And my eldest daughter already knew, and she came over because she knew how upset we would be. What a price to pay. And this Bangla, the Ein Yoter Giv'al. And my dear student, Brother Eugene, Rabbi Yehuda Singer, but to us, he will always be Brother Eugene from the Purim skit of the early 70s. He gave me a gift, this volume. It's by Dina's daughter, Dina and Ellie's daughter, Batsheva Sadan. I highly recommend the volume. But you have to have many tissues with you when you read it to collect the tears. So when you talk about the Moshe, you talk about Leah, we talk about DMT, Israel, an institution that influences ultimately, I wouldn't be surprised if it's well over 100,000 at least, boys, girls, men, women, tens of thousands who have come in Aliyah. But what a price to pay. Shem Yirachem. It's the result of BMT. When I wrote about Rabbi Rebel, and by the way, my doctor is worthless because I find out so many decades later, I was writing about my young cousin. I'm a Kalvariski, Rabbi Rebel's a Kalvariski, the Rosh Hashiva Chevron, David Cohen is a Kalvariski. It's a family, and my nephew is a big Rosh Hashiva. He's a Kalvariski. It's a family that evidently has certain genes that produce Mabitzei Torah. Baruch Hashem. I know the book has been reprinted the 4 times, and people are yelling already for a 5th edition. But nevertheless, if I were to get my doctorate today, I would submit to Sylvi Era and say, but at least when I wrote about him, I didn't know it was my cousin. Okay. So Rabbi Rebbe writes that once we had a high school, we had to have a college. It was the natural result of Talmudical Academy. Once BMT began, and BMT thrived, and BMT took roots, there was a Mr. Joe Griff. And I want to speak about Joe Griff now. Hakarat HaTov. I basically owe my life to him. Those of you familiar with Washington, I write about it in Washington. I produced the document because I always worried that I have such stories, no one will believe me. All right. But when you see Rabbi Belton's letter to me about Mr. Griss, you got to believe it. It can't be made up. Joe Griss came to America in the late 30s with his brother, Oscar. They were only here for a little while. They had a big business in Poland, but they had a branch here they organized. And they couldn't go back. The war broke out. Oscar remained a totally firm Jew, very close to the Rav, involved in Moriah. Again, I trust you know what I'm talking about, a little shul that was built on Broadway, 72nd, whatever. You can look up my work on the Rav, you see the exact address. Built for the Rav, where he had a good shear every Tuesday night, and one Shabbos a month he would spend there, and one either Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, some of the Chagim he would spend there. And it was a very important shul because the people gathered around the Rav were, we'll put it mildly, not poor people. These were all diamond merchants, etc., and they were a big source of contributions to the Torah world. That Agudat Yisrael until today boasts about the Chinuch HaTzmai dinner in the mid-50s, where once the Rav agreed to come and speak in honor of Aaron Kotler, his Balabatim came as well, Vahamevin Yavin. Joe Griss, on the other hand, remained a Jew that the shul he didn't go to was the Orthodox shul. Okay? But he already... America got to him. And then a problem developed in his family. And Oscar said to him, come see my Rebbe, maybe he can help you. Joe Griss went to see the Rav. And the Rav said, I can't help you here, but go speak with my wife. The Rav told them off. What do you expect from your children if you don't give them a yeshiva education? And Joe Griss went to speak with the Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Tanya, and they hit it off. Same Geret Yiddish, Mamaloshin. And Joe Griss became a great admirer of the Rebbetzin. In the documentary on the Rav, which I was privileged to bring into the world, and that's the only thing in my life I did single-handedly. Everyone laughed at me. It'll never be. Baruch Hashem. So Eiv Levavitz, Zichrono Levracha, I just want you to know that Eiv Levavitz said to me, up to $1 million, you don't have to raise funds. We put out that documentary in the highest level of broadcast. The people we hired were from public broadcast. It ran over $990,000, and it was all from Eiv Levavitz. When the documentary was ready to be shown, it was shown the first time in Boston, and Eiv said in public, it was the happiest day of my life. He later sent his son-in-law and daughter to me to meet me, went way out of their way, to thank me for bringing in into that project. Imagine, I took $1 million from the man, and he thanked me for the project. So Eiv Levavitz says something there which is incorrect. The Rav was not at his wife's deathbed when she died. And I think he says he was out fund collecting for my mommies. Here's the real story. And I heard the story from the people involved. These ears heard it directly. The Rebbetzin was very ill. She was on her deathbed, 67. Mr. Griss went to visit the Rebbetzin and said to her, Rebbetzin, what can I do for you to lighten your feelings. And the Rebbetzin said to him, Yaskala, the Rosh Yeshiva at YU are underpaid. And on the spot, the Rebbetzin, Mr. Gris said to the Rebbetzin, I am pledging $1 million to YU. It was the first $1 million pledge YU ever got. $125,000 a year for 8 years. And I'm putting a pin into the money. It is only for the salaries of the Rosh Yeshiva. I have to tell you that overnight my salary doubled. That's the letter I reproduced in Washington in the appendix. Dr. Belkin asking us to write thank you notes to Mr. Joe Gris. Now, when that announcement was made public, that's where the rub was. Dr. Belkin asked him to come into New York when they would make the announcement. The rub would be there, Mr. Gris would be there, and the Rebbetzin died in Boston when the rub was there at that announcement. Well, what did I do with the money? I have to be honest with you, I was in the rabbinate, and you all know I built the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County. Today the shul is in its third home, infinitely bigger, state-of-the-art mikvah. Arab, if anyone would have told me that in 1962, when we didn't even have a minyan to begin with, but one medical doctor who was about tshuva and wanted an Orthodox shul, I would say, you're crazy, all right, but 60 years later, wow. So I got $2,000 from the shul a year. I was telling my grandchildren, they thought I'm talking $2,000 a month. They said, no, a year. And while you added $2,000 to the shul, it was a new shul, I had $4,000 from the shul, $4,000 from YU, not exactly a great salary that you can live on, to put it mildly. So we manage dedication. Even by the standards of 66, 67, $8,000. I remember I once gave a Hesped at a funeral, and one of the leading conservative rabbis in the world came over to me afterwards. I have a shtela for you, $25,000 a year. And I said, does it have a mechitza? He called me a masochist. What are you doing to your wife and children? But this is very important, because my salary at YU doubles. What do we do with the money? 68. Joined the RCA. Malcolm, myself, our two eldest daughters, and made a trip to Israel. We vowed that we would settle. When we came back, we made a neder that we would settle within 1 year. We were zaycha lalot atza berina 10 months later. Now, in America, Mr. Gris, why you? The very reasons that gave birth to BMT germinated in his mind. YU has to have a center in Jerusalem, and the most brilliant Rebbe in the world has to teach brilliant Talmidim in Yerushalayim. And he went to the Rav. I want to build a center. I want you to go in Aliyah. He bothered the Rav. Look, I imagine if you nudge the Rav enough and you're Mr. Joe Gris, the Rav said, all right. The Rav probably figured by the time he built it, Mashiach will be here twice over. He didn't know Mr. Gris. He built the branch of the Jewish, of the museum, Israel Museum, to see his name, Caroline and Joseph Gris. He went to work and built it here. The Rav, as it approaches completion, 75, the Rav couldn't come. He was physically already not what he used to be. In addition, as you all know, he never got over his wife's death. Mr. Gruth was very disappointed. Teddy Kollek put tremendous pressure on Mr. Gruss. The building is a security hazard. There was nothing around here. This originally was an orchard. I still remember oranges and grapefruits growing. This whole area. It's worth millions today. It's worth billions of dollars. And it was an orchard. Malech HaMishan, the kibbutz. And it was a security hazard. You had a building standing empty. The building was ready in 75. And he desperately wanted the building for David Yellen's Teachers College. You can imagine what would have been Korea High School for Girls, Machon Lev, here David Yellen's. That's a fine institution. I have one daughter has a master's from there. But religious Jews, irreligious Jews, Arabs, men, women, dressed, undressed, like Tel Aviv. And here I have to be honest with you. Why you would have been happy? It was a very difficult period for why you. Reb Shmuel Belkin, whom no one has ever said thanks to, it's a criminal charge against Bernard Rebel Graduate School that they have not had a doctorate done on Rabbi Dr. Samuel Belkin. It's criminal. A Korat HaTov. Dr. Belkin was very ill. YU was practically bankrupt. David Yellen's take it. And here we have to give credit. Rabbi David Miller is sitting here. You all know Rabbi David. We've been teaching together. How many years is it? 50 at least. 50 years. Rabbi David is Rabbi David. Without him, there would not be a kollel that functions so beautifully here over the decades. But you got to give thanks to his father. His father was the only person, Rabbi Israel Miller, on the YU administration who was totally in favor fighting for a branch in Israel. There were others who were not opposed. There were others who were opposed. Rabbi Miller was in favor, 100%. And I can tell you a story. I don't know, Rabbi David, if you know the story. I used to walk back from the Michala, and they were building. It had to be 73, 74. There was your father jumping on the mountain. And, you know, I knew your father from the Bronx. We're Bronx kids, let's be honest. No one knows that. They think Riverdale is in China. We're Bronx kids. Hey, whatever was in the Bronx is in Riverdale. It's also part of the Bronx. So I remember I said to your father, Rabbi Miller, why don't we have a sign up? Why, you know, I was so happy. Why use my life? Why you? We're building. And your father says to me, we put up a sign, the Haredim will demonstrate. No sign, let's finish. When it's finished, we'll talk. On this side of the ocean, your father was on the American side. On this side was Rabbi Lenny Rosenfeld. And those of you, I trust you've heard the name, Rabbi Dr. Leonard Rosenfeld, make believe you know who I'm talking about, so the ignorant pass for the wise. He was an early Talmud of the Rav, son-in-law of Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. And Rabbi Rosenfeld, open up Washington, you'll see letters I publish of Rabbi Rosenfeld to Dr. Belkin, to the Rav, leading at this end, come, we need the YU outlook desperately. Join us. So you had Rabbi Miller, you had Rabbi Rosenfeld. God privileged me. Again, I don't want to say I've had a few achievements in my life. I can't say this is the biggest, otherwise God will say you did your job. I don't want that. The Rebbe has a whole treasure. You can't say you're finished, but it is a big achievement. I got home from basic training. I remember it like yesterday. Look in Washington. Every word there is correct. I only want to tell you one, what, just emphasize one aspect. Look in Washington. I got home from basic training. Don't laugh. I was 38 years of age. The Chayal Mitzpayen. Two awards for sharpshooting. Baruch Hashem. It was an experience. And it's Chol HaMoed Pesach. I'm ready to collapse. And the phone rings. And it's Whitey Hurwitz on the phone. BMT needs a new building desperately. They were ready to build in Kibbutz Mordechai, but this building is standing empty. I spoke with the Jewish agency. They want you to meet Mr. Gris at the King David Hotel. Bring your book. Give him a gift, your book, for an untraveled group of American Jewish Orthodoxy. We'll pay you back for the book. I want to go on record. On this day, I never got paid back for the book, but it was the best investment I ever made in my life. And I went to meet Mr. Gris. I can show you exactly where in the King David lobby we stood. And Mr. Gris says, Dr. Rothkopf, the Jewish agency knew me yet as Rothkopf, and they pushed the doctorate to show, rabbi's not enough. I assume the doctorate is teaching. Dr. Rothkopf, I've heard some wonderful things about what you're doing. I said, Mr. Griff, whatever you've heard about what I'm doing, it's because of you. And he probably looked at me, who's this idiot? Because of me. I said, Mr. Griff, do you remember the Rebbitzin? Of course. Do you remember the pledge you made? Of course. What did I do with the money? My salary doubled. He visited Israel. Everything we vowed we'd come back a year later. We did, 10 months later. Everything I'm doing here is because of you. I said, why are you upset that the rubbish not coming? What's important is the Rub's message. And it lives on with his students. That's what we will teach. And I have to tell you, at that moment, we both started crying. A poor kid from the Bronx and a billionaire from Poland and Manhattan. We fell on each other's shoulders. The next day, Kolek was cursing me. By the way, Kolek could barely speak Hebrew. Take my word for it. Even the bear picture, Tetov Mimenu. But he knew how to curse in English.
Wow.
I have proof to this. And Moshe Kroner calls Whitey Hurwitz. Is what I'm hearing true? What happened? And Whitey says, Aaron Rakefe, Zahako. And we're privileged. Versus fear, versus an institution, versus influences. Gave birth to the Abraham program. You just heard Stephanie talk about more than 40 schools that are in our network. And I want to tell you a few stories about Mr. Gersky. Bring him back to life. Joe Gris, whenever he visited Israel, wherever I was teaching, they'd send a car for me. We'd have lunch together. And then he would come to the building, two interferers, two people would walk in back of him, and he would, this has to be fixed, that has to be fixed. A month later, they would come back to check that it was done. He was really on top of it. Halavai, we'd have him here today. Stephanie would have a long list. The floor here, the brick is out of place. This has to be done. That has to be done. He loved this building. So one time we're standing in front of the building and he said to me, you see, my name, Shol Yosef, Shol Gris, who am I named for? The Shol Nation, the Lemberger Rav, of Shol Yosef Nachmanson. His father was a shochet for the shoulder nations. And he was proud of it. You could start to understand when I said to him, continuity, and Shefiyut, the Rebbe's not here, his Talmidim are here, he understood what I was saying. Said something else to me at a different time, never forgot. If you go to Borough Park, you'll notice many buildings have Caroline and Joe Griffith's names. He did wonderful things. He instituted pensions. I don't know if you realize, Watch Yeshiva had a pension. I remember when YU, I was already teaching, I was a Rosh Yeshiva already, in the early 60s, he introduced a pension plan. People couldn't believe it. And until today, I can't believe it either. I get money for having taught in YU in the 60s that there's a pension plan. Baruch Hashem, I'm alive and kicking and teaching, but I have to take out a minimum. There's all types of laws, a pension plan. And I can't find as much as you take out. The stock, that they're up again. Joe Gris, he did that for all the yeshiva. What the man has so many. So he once said to me, the kinderlach mit the payaslach, zay zayn uns a zukunft. The kids with the payas, they're our future. And he hit the nail on the head. Baruch Hashem. Think at one point, but he understood the lev and nefesh. If we don't have these kids with the payers, we have no tomorrow. This is our future. And then he once told me, I'll never forget this, you should know, Dr. Rothkopf, I want to die penniless. I took care of my son. I took care of my daughter. I want every cent I have to go to Jewish education. No, I don't know how many people can say, I want to die penniless. Quote, Mr. Joe Gris. And let me tell you the offshoot of all this. BMT and Chris. May of 1980, I got maybe the most important phone call I ever got in my life. Harav Rakefet, ata mukhan lekabel sicha, b'li legalorot et pratei hasicha. Baruch atah Adonai melech haolam shehakol nehiyeh bidvarav. Enjoy the water, because there's a shiloh that just drink to water the water cords, but your vocal cords could be enough to make a bracha. Have to be in there. So I had a funny call. I've gotten calls. I figured it's a student of mine doing a terrible, I've gotten calls like that, a terrible sin, and they think I'm a priest. I can tell them, say a few Hail Marys, and it's fine. So I get this call, and I say, V'lakasha, taviri et asicha. And the person gets on, Poma da Be'aharie, Anachmi Yodin Shafari Deichla Lameh Gemara Himatamuchan, Lameh Gemara B'Moskva. And that was my introduction to the Mossad, to Russia, to all that comes afterward. Well, we were briefed for over half a year before we went in the first time, and some of you know that in this classroom a few weeks ago, the first time that I taught in Russia was sitting right in front of me, participating in the shir, Rabbi Arye Katsin. And I came out of Russia, you're shell-shocked. Came out in the early 80s, we came out January 81, and we organized Shvatami. Shvatami, a center for Russian outreach, a yeshiva and a center. And I said, the whole thinking has to be like our thinking in BMT and Gris. Anglos, we reach out, Anglo mentality. basically we speak English. Russians, let's do exactly the same, a mirror image, but outreach in Russian, Russian mentality. And that was an offshoot that I gained from all that I saw here in BMT and in Gris. And we were very successful. Shvatami, now we're more or less coming to an end. And there's going to be a new organization that's going to emulate what's happening in America with the outreach to the second generation Russians, where it doesn't necessarily have to be in Russian. It can be in English. But you have to deal with the mentality, that second generation Russian. And we're bringing it here. We've already started. And even with the Ukrainian situation, we've already outreached in Purim and Smachot, and there's a lot to be done. But it was the same concept of Anglo mentality to Anglos, Russian mentality to Russians. Now, let me go one step further. I want to mention one individual who I don't think is sitting here, but I want to publicly thank him. Ellie, you see what we're dealing with? Okay. And I want to thank Ellie Weinstein, the Weinsteins. I want to thank the Dorfmans. I don't think they're here. But here we had one individual young man, Yosef Mordechai Gachman, known as Yomo. And everyone listening knows that Yomo has been my right hand in helping me with the Zoom, with the microphone, even putting up the partition today, because frankly, I've been through Corona, and David has been through it, and I don't want to go through it again, to put it mildly. And right now, my next door neighbor, the famous professor Horowitz, Carmen Horowitz, my doctor, etc. He has Corona. My granddaughter-in-law has Corona. My great-grandchildren have Corona. My grandson has Corona. So Corona, what did they say to the Tsar? Seid gesund and keep far from here. Fiddler on the roof. So that's what I say to Corona. Be well wherever you are, but far away from human beings. And all this is Yomo. And Yomo, too, he's a product of what, everything I've told you. Here's a young man born in the Ukraine, Soviet Russia, reaches America, winds up in Porat Shraga, which rents this building and is the closest replica we have to BMT today. Rav David, do you agree with me? Porat Shraga, the closest replica we have to what BMT was in its golden years. And he winds up here, falls in love with Israel. And we want to thank him for his help. This year I was blessed. Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, Lieutenant Colonel, finished his career with the military and the army and the American government. And he's here, what's it, the GI Bill of Rights, it was called in my time. And he's my student, Nicole, for 2 years, 47 years apart. Get it? Okay. So this year I had Mark as a backup to Yomo. But anyone listening to the Shayurim and YU Torah, there's a thank you to Yomo. And what I want to thank the Weinstein family and the Dorfman family, and I want to thank Sherry Levy immensely, and Rabbi Miller, and Rabbi Bednash, and I thank myself. Baruch Hashem, we achieved Israeli citizenship, and the last few weeks he's had a very big problem. The Russians say he has to be in their army. He was born under Soviet Russia. The Ukrainians say he was born in Kiev. He's in our army. They're going to say he's an American passport. He's going to say an Israeli passport. And I want to go one step further and conclude with a charge. Everything we're talking about, let me reiterate, how BMT began and the vision and the Anglos of the Anglos, Moshe Krona, Chaim Hamiel, Yechmeshe Horowitz, Leah, the price we paid, Joe Gris, YU, this magnificent institution, the campus, and you don't realize what a campus this is. We still have permission in the original charter. Two more multi-story buildings could be built on this campus. Halavai, we should need it, and halavai, we should be successful in prodding YU to do something bigger here. But we're trying our best, Stephanie. I know you are, so thank God you're with us, the governor, and yours truly, and everyone else here. We hold our breath and stand behind you 1,000%. But what's going on here? What's happening here? Why does it have to be with heartache? Why can't it be beautiful? How do we know it's real? And I have to tell you, there's one Rambam that says it all. Hilchat Malachim, Perek Yudbet, Halacha Bet. And boy, did I use this Rambam in the army. Le'olam, lo yitasek avdam, b'devrei ha-hagadot, v'yad lo yalichtet, b'drashot ha-murim, b'dinim e'il k'yoksvechem, v'lo yasinim ikar, she'ein ma'viyim lo lidei yire, v'lo lidei ahava, v'kein lo yakshov ha-kitzim, amruch ha-chamim, kipach rucham, shel mechashvei kitzim. What a Rambam says, comes to the... I don't tell you how much it's been written. The Gula, how will it be? Kimat, kimat? Or will it be min ha-shamayim, the difference in midrashim, the perik chelek, that Mashiach coming, shouldn't come, I should live, I shouldn't live to see it. And the Rambam says, don't get involved in all these different theories, halacha l'maisa. We'll only understand it when it happens, as we live it. Very powerful. We are living it. There are more Jews al Admat HaKodesh today than in the whole rest of the world put together. Just remember, you talk about America, people say 5 million Jews. I'd be happy to know that there are 3 million halachic Jews in America. Wow. We are living it. Success, laughter, tears, struggles. But we're living the dream. Spoke about this in the Kollel. We are living the dream. It just was an article in yesterday's Post from Uri Pilichovsky, the son of one of our students years ago in BMT, Stewie Pilichovsky. Read that article, Living the Dream. I'm inspired by the way he writes. Maybe I can take a little bit credit that I inspired his parents. So it shows in the son. I understand that his wife, American born, is the mayor of where you live, Yehuda. Do you understand what that means? The mayor, American born. Wow. What an achievement. How did I use this Rambam in the army? Okay, I'll share it with you. When I did basic training, there was one aspect that was a little bit upsetting. Cursing, everyone cursing. The mafaktim, the command is ordering you to this, to that, keeping busy, shooting, running, jumping, gas masks. And they're all responding with curse words. All right, you hear curse words, I can tell you, Russian, English. In Hebrew, they know curse words. Whatever curse word you use is the Kiyum of Talmud Torah. Ben Zonah, Ben Nidah, you hear kids yelling at each other. Wow, 5-year-old kids, they know a Sugin Yavama, the Sugin Silva. Fabulous. But more than that, here's what I would do. I would repeat this Rambam by heart. אמרו חכמים, דיפק רוחם של מחשבי קיצים, ומחכים וצאים, רכזת, מה אתה ממלא? What are you mumbling? לומי תורה המפקד. יפה, תמשיך, continue. דיפק רוחם של מחשבי קיצים. We are living the dream. It's, by the way, you write about Aliyah, the latest Torah to go. I'm so proud. Has a whole section on Aliyah. And one of the ingredients they tell you you need for Aliyah is a sense of humor. And I sign on the dotted line. But now I want to end on a very serious way. Look, we're living the dream. Our families are integrated. Someone would have told me when I got off the boat in Haifa 53 years ago that my eldest daughter would be choosing Dayanim, a key member of the committee to choose like the chief rabbis call her. No chief rabbi, all right, maybe occasionally I did get a call from a chief rabbi, but call her, plead with her for me to start. Our kids are integrated. Our grandchildren are integrated. Our great-grandchildren had to sign. I signed three secrecy clauses in my life. Russia, the missing in action. Some of you know my involvement from 82. And my grandson. Grandson getting, one of my grandsons getting a doctorate from Technion. He invented something that has military implications. So the head of the department who tutored him and is so proud, he met us a number of times, and because I had a lot of children at the Technion, and I would meet them, I'd come up once a year, twice a year. They met their wives there. It's a very nice Torah community there. They're very close to each other. It's a beautiful shul. He wanted to honor myself and Malka, showing us what my grandson has developed. There was a whole video. Then they did a live display. We had to sign a security clause. So, you know, we're integrated. Baruch Hashem. A great miracle is happening in Israel. According to all projection, the Haredim, as they're called, and some of us say, again, I'm using popular language, I consider myself the biggest Haredi in the world. All right, I don't have a beard, pay his black clothes, but if you know me, you understand what I'm saying. But Halavai, everyone had a beard, pay his, and wore a uniform, although I just read a memoir by Michael Kaufman. No one will accuse him of not understanding the Haredi world, and he has a whole chapter against wearing black, why we wear black. It's totally against the Torah and our whole understanding. Read the chapter. He wore white on Shabbos. So Haredim are going to be the majority of this country. They're going to have to run the country. They're going to have to run the hospitals and run the military. And they're going to have to run the Mossad and the Shehud Bakichon Klali, the Shabak, the police department, the industry, the manufacture, the foreign relations. Haredim have been living in a ghetto. And there's a reason why. I argue with my grandchildren. Everyone is angry. They don't do this, they don't do that, they don't serve in the army. I say, they look at what happened to us Ashkenazim from the time Moshe Mendelssohn stepped out of the ghetto, and Mendelssohn, the great-grandson of the Ramah, for whom he is named, Moshe Isserles, Moshe Mendelssohn. Look what happened to us. Assimilation, intermarriage. Take a look, Biden. Everyone around him is Jewish, married to a non-Jew. As much Jewish understanding, a dog, the Kelev in Israel, understands more. At least the dog understands Hebrew. God have mercy, what we're up against. The Secretary of State, the ambassador to Israel. If I represent Israel, I said, we don't accept this ambassador. We don't accept. We accept every intermarried Jew who hates Israel, has no concept of what the state of Israel is about. has no concept of Eretz Yisrael, Yehuda B'Shomer, Yerushalayim Yakodesh, Ramei Reshpo. Well, we're up against what we have lost. I don't blame the Haredim. But willy-nilly, the word the Rav taught me, willy-nilly, we got to take over the country. We got to come out of the ghetto. We who are from the greater YU community, we are the most important role models possible. Look at us. Among us, Alamdanim Mufhakim, we can hold our own with any Rosh Yeshiva in the world. Among us, Atzadikim, B'chom Asenu. And yet, we live in the big world. No problem. No contradiction. I can quote the Rebbe 1,000 times over. This is the reality in which we find ourselves. I can quote Avshim Shilafol Chayesh 1,000 times over. This is the reality. We've accomplished it. There's nothing to be afraid of. The example. We have to help them. We have to guide them. You can't believe what the literature coming out now. There's now a magazine, a Makom. Look at that magazine. And what we accomplished in YU. Torah was Torah. Yeshiva was Yeshiva. Then diversity, the Western world. We have a lot to be proud of. And I want to add one final thought. There's one tremendous advantage to living in Israel. Go back to Teaneck, Beverly Hills, Lawrence, Woodmere, find Jewish communities. Whatever they do, lawyer, doctor, dentist, real estate, it's no mitzvah. They're part of the Gentile world. Remember what I said in class, the Gemara and Ketubah, at the end? Kol Adam B'Chutzaretz, Kivu Aveda B'Yisara, Seth in Woodmere, on Thanksgiving Day, on Christmas, on New Year's, the Minyanim 1 hour later, in Borough Park, in Williamsburg. Is that Aveda Zara or not? I can't comprehend it in full today. You're in Israel? Whatever you do. Kingdom deal writer, mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Not everyone can be a Rav, not everyone can be a Rosh Yeshiva. I spoke about it yesterday in class in a different context. To be a Rebbe, you have to be an individual who loves every student. Period. Not everyone is a tzaddik. Today I teach only tzaddikim. That's a different story. But I taught high school level, college level, BMT. Gold, Mikhlava. Not everyone. Love everyone. Everyone has a Mishem. Everyone is a Jew. Everyone can be reached. Everyone can be inspired. Come out of the ghetto in Israel. Dentist, doctor, lawyer, real estate, mitzvah, Yishuv, Eretz Yisrael. So we have an obligation. We have accomplished it. We're not assimilating. We're not intermarrying. Lead the way and turn this state into a golden state of Torah and Yirat Shemayim. Eretz Yisrael, Ma'am Yisrael, Al Pi Torah Yisrael. Thank you very, very much. I want to say why you have prepared a collation. It's a bit of a reunion for BMT, so please make yourselves at home. Following my tradition, are there any questions from the students in front of me? Mark, open it to the world. Let's see. A very big crowd is on screen. I imagine it's maybe people in Israel, students who put their get here. They can speak. Are there any questions from London, from America, from Israel, from South Africa.
Rabbi Avichai Kosher V'Sameach, all the best.
Kosher V'Sameach, Morgim L'Shemcha. The person you hear speaking, because of him, you can drink Coca-Cola on Pesach. It's the Rav HaMakshir to the OU. Vic, how are you? Vic Snow, how are you?
Yeah, Baruch Hashem, doing much better. Tired and weak, but much better. Baruch Hashem, thank you, Rebbe.
Only go my Kayalo Kayalo. Okay, in 3 minutes
again. Chag Sameach, Rebbe. Chag Kosher V'Sameach.
Okay, a question to you in 3 minutes again. Welcome, happy